Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver, Alice Bryant, Brian Lynn, and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
Japanese hunters killed at least two whales Monday in its first commercial whale hunt in more than 30 years. Japan stopped commercial whaling in 1988 after the International Whaling Commission, or IWC, banned the killing of whales. However, last December, Japan said it would leave the IWC on June 30th. Japan has long disputed the idea that whales are endangered. Even with the ban in place, for years Japan continued to hunt whales for what it said was scientific research. However, critics have long said Japan was not truthful about its purpose. They argued that the activity was commercial because Japan sold the meat collected from the hunts. In the 2017-2018 whaling season, Japanese sailors killed 333 whales in Antarctic waters. More than 120 of them were pregnant females. The whaling ships sailed Monday from the port of Kushiro on the northern island of Hokkaido. They will hunt in Japanese waters for three sorts of whales, minke, sei, and brides. Japan's return to commercial whaling has caused international criticism. Kitty Block is president of Humane Society International. She was angry about Japan's decision and said it is undermining its international image for a product that is no longer in demand. Whaling is a very small industry in Japan. Government data says that whale accounts for 0.1% of meat eaten in the country. The industry employs a few hundred people. But some experts say Japan's move might help some whales, because it will mean that Japan will stop hunting whales in the Southern Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, and other sensitive areas. Japan's fisheries agency set a limit of 227 whale kills for this year. Japan caught as many as 1,200 whales a year in the name of scientific research. I'm Katie Weaver.
Americans are divided on the issue of climate change. This divide is most apparent in Oregon, where state lawmakers had been considering a climate bill. On one side are lawmakers representing cities, where many of the state's liberals live. On the other side are lawmakers from conservative and economically depressed rural areas. Recently, 11 members of Oregon's State Senate led a 9-day walkout to deny the number of lawmakers needed to vote on the climate bill. All 11 members belong to the Republican Party. 9 of them returned to the state Senate on Saturday after learning that Democratic Party lawmakers did not have enough of their own votes to pass the bill. On Saturday, senators voted 17 to 10 to kill the measure. Most Senate Democrats had supported the bill. Its aim was to cut production of carbon gases. The measure would have been the second law of its kind in the United States. Actions surrounding the climate bill speak to larger political issues taking place in Oregon. The climate bill story has received international attention in part because some militias have supported the Republican senators.
Experts say the Senate protest was unavoidable given the state's political divisions. In recent years, Oregon has been known nationally as a liberal state. But though its cities are liberal, about 40% of people always vote Republican. Those voters live mainly in rural areas, says Priscilla Southwell, a professor at the University of Oregon. The reality is that it is a much more divided state than people realize, she told the Associated Press. That political divide is also causing an economic divide. The city of Portland has grown, but huge parts of the state do not have enough money to keep public libraries open or staff police departments. Logging was historically one of Oregon's most profitable industries. But the industry has experienced cuts as a result of environmental restrictions and a changing world economy. Rural voters worried the climate legislation would cause the end of logging and trucking. Bridger Hasbrook is a self-employed logger in Dallas, Oregon. He said the climate bill would ruin so many lives and put so many people out of work. He told the AP that if the people he works for lose too much money, he would have to find different work. Some worry the state's climate divide could incite an anti-government movement in Oregon like that of 3 years ago. In 2016, two militia members put together an armed takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. In the recent political crisis, one militia group had offered to act as security to Republican senators. The Capitol was temporarily closed because of what police said was a real militia threat. Eric Ward leads the Western States Center, a nonprofit group. He said extremist groups have expanded in Oregon over the past 5 years as rural voters grow more hopeless. Ward said there are organizations and people who are taking leadership, but that leadership is led by bigotry and threats of violence. Patty Limerick is with the Center of the American West at the University of Colorado, Boulder. She said that over the past 50 years, the rural U.S. West has seen big changes, such as federal protections for forests and animals. Limerick added that sometimes such big changes take time for people to accept, and sometimes it takes a couple of centuries. For now, it's unclear what will happen next. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Alice Bryant. From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Many diseases and medical conditions are caused by things out of our control. Yet experts say you can control, and even prevent, many of the risk factors that increase your chances of dying. Experts note that an unhealthy lifestyle can put you at great risk of heart disease and stroke. Poor diet, having too much body fat, and a lack of physical exercise all increase your risk of heart disease. So can using tobacco products and drinking too much alcohol. So doctors urge us to eat healthy foods, get exercise, stop smoking, and limit our alcohol intake. But there is something else you can do, and it is free and easy. Smile. Anand Chakalingam is a heart disease specialist at University of Missouri Healthcare in Columbia, Missouri. He advises his patients to smile.
When we smile, the brain wiring gets altered. The chemicals that are released are more positive.
He says smiling is a first step in fighting physical and emotional stress and its sometimes harmful effects on human health. This is not just New Age advice. Several studies support Dr. Chakalingam's prescription to smile more. When we talk about disorders of the heart and blood vessels, we are talking about cardiovascular diseases, such as coronary heart disease. And they are the number one cause of death around the world. That information comes from the World Health Organization. The main cause of heart attacks and strokes are blockages in blood vessels. These prevent blood from flowing to the heart or the brain. The most common reason for these blockages is a buildup of fatty deposits on the inner walls of the arteries. When you feel stressed or under pressure, your body releases many natural hormones, including adrenaline and cortisol. Adrenaline increases your heart rate and blood pressure. Cortisol is the body's main stress hormone. It increases sugar in the bloodstream. If you are truly in danger, these hormones can help you. They are part of what we call our fight or flight response. However, when stressed for a long period, these stress hormones are ever present in our bodies. And that, medical researchers warn, may lead to health problems. Researchers with the American Heart Association say the connection between stress and heart disease is still unclear. However, they claim that when people are stressed for long periods of time, they may not make the best decisions about what to eat. They may overeat, smoke, or drink too much alcohol. They may not get enough exercise or sleep. And all of this can lead to health problems. Dr. Chakalingam says a smile may be one way to help. He tells his patients to smile 20 times an hour. To some, that might seem like a lot of smiling. Or some might even feel foolish, smiling for seemingly no reason. But a smile does not involve drugs. It is not invasive,
like a surgical operation. It is free and it has no bad side effects.
Once people smile, they are relaxing. This relaxation directly lowers blood pressure, improves sugar levels in the blood. If we are smiling, we are breaking that link between stress and health.
And it just may provide a little extra protection to everyone's heart health. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the administration of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. It is January 20th, 1977, Inauguration Day. America's newly elected president, Jimmy Carter, is on his way to the White House after his swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol building. But the new president is not riding in a car, he is walking. His wife, Rosalind, and his daughter, Amy, walk with him. Crowds along Pennsylvania Avenue cheer. Bands play. On this cold day in Washington, Americans look to the future. Watergate, the crisis that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, is several years in the past. The Vietnam War is history, too. Republican Gerald Ford served the remaining years of Nixon's term. Many people believe he brought respect and order back to the government. Yet he lost the office to Democrat Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. The nation still has problems. Unemployment is high. So is inflation. But the future of the nation looks bright. Jimmy Carter feels sure about his future, too. On the day before his inauguration, he said,
I do feel that the people of this nation, and I think the entire world, wish me well and want to see me succeed as president. And that gives me a sense of reassurance and confidence. I think I'm ready now to be president.
During the election campaign, Carter often said he would be different from other presidents. He told voters he was not a member of the Washington political establishment, so he would do things in his own independent way. Carter was from Georgia, in the deep south of the United States. There had not been a president born in the South in more than 100 years. Carter studied nuclear engineering and attended the United States Naval Academy. He planned to stay in the Navy. Then his father died, and he decided to return to Georgia to operate the family peanut farm. Carter began his political life on the committee that supervised schools in his hometown of Plains, Georgia. He also served in other local offices. In 1966, he failed to win the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia. For the next 4 years, he traveled around the state gathering support. He won the next election. As governor, Carter earned praise for reorganizing the state government. He also reformed state programs dealing with prisons and mental health care. In 1972, he offered himself as a candidate for vice president with presidential candidate George McGovern. But the Democratic Party chose someone else. Carter did not wait long to begin his next political move. He would try to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1976. Jimmy Carter was hardly known outside the state of Georgia. Political experts gave him little chance. Even his mother was surprised to learn that he wanted to be president. President of what? She asked. But the farmer and former governor had a plan. He would try to win his party's primary elections in the South. He believed this would give him enough support at the party convention to win the nomination. Other Democratic candidates tried to stop him, but his plan worked. By the time of the convention, he had enough support to win the nomination on the first ballot. In the general election, Carter defeated President Ford by almost 2% of the popular vote. He lost in the West and Middle West, but won the South and Northeast. President Carter believed strongly in human rights. He hoped he could use his new position to support human rights throughout the world. On this and other issues, he was not afraid of being criticized when he believed he was right. For example, he believed it was right for the United States to end its control of the Panama Canal. He won congressional support for treaties to give control to Panama by the year 2000. He believed it was right to give diplomatic recognition to Communist China. And he believed it was right to continue negotiations with the Soviet Union about limiting nuclear weapons, even though he denounced human rights violations there. In 1979, Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, known as SALT II. However, Carter decided not to send the treaty to the Senate for approval after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan later that year. One of the finest moments of Carter's presidency took place at Camp David. That is the holiday home of American presidents. There, in March 1979, President Anwar Sadat of Egypt met with Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel. They signed a peace treaty, ending 30 years of war between their countries.
We are privileged to witness tonight a significant achievement in the cause of peace, an achievement none thought possible a year ago or even a month ago, an achievement that reflects the courage and wisdom of these two leaders.
Both men said the treaty would not have been possible without President Carter's help. President Carter was not as successful in dealing with the economy. High unemployment and inflation continued. The federal deficit increased, although he had promised to end it. And there was a shortage of gasoline. The shortage resulted when oil-producing countries limited production and exports. Carter urged American companies to develop new sources of energy in addition to oil. He said the United States needed to do this because it could not always depend on getting enough oil from other countries.
This intolerable dependence on foreign oil threatens our economic independence and the very security of our nation. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now.
During the gasoline shortage, Americans had to wait in long lines to buy fuel. They did not like it and were angry. Many were even more angry about a different situation. Like the gasoline shortage, it was a result of actions in another distant place.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
On November 4th, 1979, Muslim extremists in Iran seized the American Embassy in Tehran. They took many hostages, including more than 60 Americans. The extremists said they were punishing the United States for being friendly with ousted Iranian leader Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The extremists refused to negotiate. They refused to release the hostages. In early April 1980, President Carter broke off diplomatic relations with Iran. He then ordered American military forces to try to rescue the hostages in Tehran. The operation failed. A sandstorm caused two of the aircraft to crash into each other. They went down in the desert, hundreds of kilometers away. The failed rescue attempt had a major effect on the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Many Americans felt it showed that he could not do the job. Their respect for him continued to decrease as the hostages continued to be held. Other things were beginning to go wrong, too. The president's younger brother, Billy, admitted receiving a large amount of money from Libya. He took the money in exchange for supporting Libyan interests with American lawmakers. His mistake was that he did not list his name as a representative of a foreign government. In 1980 was a presidential election year in the United States. President Carter was expected to be the candidate of the Democratic Party, but his chances were almost ruined because of the situation in Iran. Carter hoped that concern for the hostages would unite the country behind him. Instead, support turned to blame. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts believed he could defeat Carter for the nomination. Kennedy won several important Democratic primary elections. But that was not enough. The party renominated Carter. Kennedy offered Carter his support, but not very strongly. This left the party divided. The Republicans got ready to win back the White House. They hoped to do it with a strong appeal to American voters. The appeal came from a man who would become one of America's most popular presidents, Ronald Reagan.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.